workload may have caused a pilot to miss seeing power lines. An extreme tarmac stranding case raises new questions. And the U.S. Senate wants even more new private jets than the House. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Tuesday, August 11, 2009. The National Transportation Safety Board has issued a preliminary report on its investigation of an RV-6 kit plane that went down on Saturday, August 1st in Caldwell, Idaho. The pilot was the sole occupant and fatality. The board reports an FAA inspector interviewed a witness who said the plane's engine began to sputter following its departure to the northwest from Caldwell Industrial Airport. The witness added that the plane appeared to be turning back for the runway when it struck power lines on the north side of the airport, then struck terrain, and was consumed in a post-crash fire. The official NTSB report on probable cause will likely not be out for a year, but there's nothing stopping us all from brushing up on our techniques for maintaining visual awareness during times of high workload. With all the talk of a passenger's bill of rights binding the airlines to humane treatment of passengers during tarmac strandings, maybe we're missing the point. What about the roles of the FAA, TSA, Customs, and the management and union rules at airports in creating these nightmares? A case that will beg all these questions happened Friday night on an ExpressJet flight from Houston to Minneapolis-St. Paul. The flight was a code share with Continental and was diverted due to thunderstorms to Rochester, Minnesota. There, the plane sat all night with 47 passengers imprisoned inside. Now, maybe you think imprisoned seems an inappropriate word. Maybe you're right. Actual prisoners have access to working toilets, meals, medical help nearby if needed, no distraught children, and much more space. ExpressJet says the problem began when the crew members realized they couldn't continue the diverted flight without violating FAA limits for time on job. The airline says a charter bus to their destination could not be arranged. Ground crews at the airport denied passengers access to the transient area of the terminal, and they couldn't be put into common areas because TSA workers had all gone home, providing no way to screen them for reboarding. ExpressJet also claims vendors at Rochester refused to service the aircraft's lone lavatory, which quickly exceeded its capacity. The passengers were finally let off at 6 a.m. Saturday morning to use indoor restrooms and buy food, then put back on the still stench-filled plane at 9:30 a.m. The flight arrived in the Twin Cities about 12 hours late. Internet forums are filled with outraged commentary and the airline's finger-pointing. The Air Transport Association had no mention of the incident in its daily email newsletter yesterday. If the airline's claims it could not have legally avoided the 8-hour holding of passengers is legitimate, and if the lack of lavatory service was really beyond its control and not just beyond its budget, the Bill of Rights debate may expand beyond just the airlines. Stay tuned. If you were outraged over plans by the U.S. Congress to provide itself with access to two new Gulfstream jets in the 2010 budget, wait till you hear the Senate version. The Wall Street Journal reports senators are considering an appropriations bill which would budget more than $500 million for 8 new jets from Gulfstream and Boeing. The Journal reports the Obama administration asked for $220 million. That was slightly more than proposed in the smaller House bill. The timing of the request, coming after a year in which lawmakers and the administration have made pariahs of corporations which use private jets, has not gone unnoticed. Many lawmakers say they'll vote against the funding when they come back from summer recess. But Ellis Brockman, a spokesman for the House Appropriations Committee, says it'll happen at some point. Quote, "The key here is not whether or not the planes will be bought, it's when the planes will be bought," unquote. He adds that lawmakers fly only 15% of the hours put on that fleet, with the rest accumulated shuttling military leaders. Up next on ANN, a LaGuardia incident shows airport security cameras aren't what they could be. A Russian airline wants your used CRJ. And Centurion makes progress in a comeback attempt for the former Teeler Diesels. You're listening to Aero News.
Remember what the future used to look like? The flying cars, the spaceports, the rocket packs and spandex outfits? That was some future, wasn't it? But hey, here's the real future. A Garmin Wass Navigator. It makes its own glide path out of GPS signals, so you can land IFR at thousands of airports with no ILS or other ground-based approach aids. Now that's a future you can believe in. Garmin Wass GPS. Follow the leader.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for August 11th. I'm Paul Plack. Have you ever watched your local TV news and seen security video from a convenience store that was of such poor quality you'd never be able to recognize the perp? Well, it turns out that even with all the post-9/11 security theater going on, airport security cameras may be no better, or may be worse. The New York Post reports that LaGuardia Airport, in that recent incident in which two cops tackled a homeless guy who appeared to be trying to detonate a suicide bomb, not one usable image was captured by security cams, and this event happened in front of a federal checkpoint in the main terminal. The bomb turned out to be a fake, but as you might imagine, authorities are nonetheless unamused. Scott McGann faces serious charges, but prosecutors are expressing frustration over the lack of any usable evidence from the cameras. The Post quotes a source in the DA's office in reporting that what little video was recovered from cameras in the general vicinity was of poor quality and, quote, showed the tops of people's heads, unquote. Thank goodness the really important stuff like shampoo confiscation is going much more smoothly. Hey, if you have a used CRJ, we may know of an interested buyer in Russia. Bombardier Aerospace says Russia's Air Volga, based in Volgograd, is undertaking a modernization of its fleet, starting with a just-announced purchase of two previously owned CRJ-200LRs acquired from a third party. The manufacturer held a briefing on Friday to welcome Air Volga to the Bombardier family and says the airline may be looking for more 50-seat RJs on the used market. In addition to serving destinations within Russia, Air Volga plans to use the CRJs to reach Armenia, Turkey, and the United Arab Emirates. The CRJ-200 cruises at up to Mach 0.81 at 41,000 feet and offers a range with 50 passengers of over 1,700 nautical miles. Bombardier claims deliveries of more than 1,500 CRJs to more than 50 customers worldwide since the series entered service in 1989. Centurion, the company charting a comeback for the turbodiesel aircraft engines formerly marketed by bankrupt T-Alert Aircraft Engines, is expressing optimism after receiving Brazilian certification for its 1.7 and 2-liter engines. The company says this makes 61 countries where the engines are certified, representing all principal countries which have regulated aviation within their borders. Centurion Board Chairman Jasper Wolfson remarked, quote, "Brazil in particular represents a very interesting market for us. Due to its economic growth and geographic conditions, there is above average demand for economic small aircraft," unquote. The company says Brazilian type acceptance for the engines in the Cessna 172 and the Piper PA-28 is expected soon. Still ahead, archaeologists find a PBY that sank off Newfoundland in 1942. An Aspen VP is up for Engineer of the Year. And if your name gets you extra screening at airports, we have good news. You're listening to Aero News.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR20 GTS. Go ahead, indulge yourself. The SR20 GTS provides entry-level luxury into the world of Cirrus, yet at a price that makes indulgence affordable. When friends, family, and business associates experience the versatility, freedom, and sheer fun of flying in your Cirrus, they'll see that it maximizes the most precious commodity of all, time. To learn more, call 888-750-9922. Or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Tuesday, August 11th, 2009. I'm Paul Plack. A World War II-era PBY Catalina, which foundered and sank during a takeoff attempt in 1942, has been discovered by divers off the coast of Quebec. Five of the nine U.S. crewmen on board at the time of the incident lost their lives. The aircraft was attempting to take off in choppy seas when the fuselage started to fill with water. Local fishermen rescued four of the crew, but the remaining five airmen went down with the plane. According to CanWest News Service, underwater archaeologists from Parks Canada found the wreckage in the course of a three-year survey of shipwrecks near the Mingan Peninsula Lighthouse in the Gulf of St. Lawrence. Environment Minister Jim Prentice promises, quote, "The plane will be protected with the full extent of applicable laws," unquote. U.S. Consul General David Fetter says, quote, "We look forward to working with our Canadian friends to verify the identity of the aircraft," unquote. There has been no announcement so far of any plans for a recovery attempt. It's not quite time for high-fiving and corks popping, but Aspen Avionics VP of Engineering Gus Kyriakis has wound up on the shortlist to win the prestigious Engineer of the Year Award from Design News. The winner will be selected in online voting by the magazine's readers and announced in the September issue. Design News describes itself as the leading technical resource for design engineers, with a circulation of 170,000. Contributing editor John Luffmiller described Kyriakos as, quote, a shirt sleeve manager, not an office dweller, with over 35 years experience in the avionics industry, and a person who considers the term impossible to be a personal challenge, unquote. Looking past Aspen on Gus's resume, one finds Avidyne, Rockwell Collins, Allied Signal, Horizon Research Labs, and Systems Engineering Labs. He holds 5 patents for RF and digital design for radar altimeters and 6 patents for RF and signal processing for TCAS. He's the youngest recipient of the Volare Award, presented by the Airline Avionics Institute. If he is named Engineer of the Year, Gus will also be inducted into the Design News Engineer Hall of Fame. Man, how would you ever talk your girlfriend into going with you to that banquet? And finally today, it's that time of year when we start seeing all the back-to-school advertising. But the TSA has another important upcoming date it wants you to keep in mind. This Saturday, August 15th, is the start of Phase 2 of the program known as Secure Flight. Now, there's plenty of reason to question the efficacy of much of what the TSA does, but this is one measure that may actually help the good guys get through airports faster and the bad guys get the attention they deserve. In a nutshell, starting Saturday, when you book your flight, you'll be required to provide your date of birth, sex, and your name in a form which exactly matches the picture ID you present at the airport. The TSA says this step will help it fulfill its congressional mandate to vet 100% of domestic passengers against its watch lists by early next year and 100% of international passengers by the end of next year. From the traveler's standpoint, it means a reduction in false positives, which have resulted in repeated hassling of passengers with names similar to terror suspects. For example, the unfortunate Presbyterian Defense Department employee with a security clearance, whose parents happen to name him Benjamin Laden, will no longer hear snapping rubber gloves every time he visits the airport. That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, the first of 4 installments of Randy Babbitt's Meet the Administrator Forum from EAA AirVenture Oshkosh. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts at iPodder, Podcast Alley, or at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.